Hey, everybody. Welcome in. Locked On Orioles Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. On today's episode, we will recap last night's game as the Marlins got back to playing baseball and took down the Orioles 4-0. We will look at a little bit of the latest Orioles news, including the new MLB.com Top 100 prospect list that came out yesterday. And then on the second half of the pod, Ben Palmer is going to join us from Pitcher List for his second time onto the pod to talk about Tommy Malone. But first, last night's ball game. The Marlins returning to play after 8 days off. They hadn't played since last Sunday, and they looked pretty good with a replacement team, pretty much. 18 positive COVID-19 tests on the Marlins meant 18 new players on the 30-man active roster for last night. And a few of those new players were in the lineup making a difference. But when you look at what happened, at least offensively, it was really the guys who were already there for the Marlins as they beat the Orioles 4-0 last night to get to 3-1 on the season. The Orioles dropped to 5-4, but still sit in second place in the AL East and would still make the playoffs if the season ended right now. But for the Marlins, it was John Birdie, already a part of this lineup, who went 2-for-4 with an RBI. Jesus Aguilar, who hit a home run, already part of the lineup. Jonathan Villar had a hit, already part of the lineup. And the other RBI went to Francisco Cervelli with his solo home run, already part of the Marlins lineup. So really the guys that they brought in, they were the ones that struggled at the plate last night. But still, they got a 4-0 win over the Orioles, who struggled at the plate. Three takeaways from last night's 4-0 loss to the Marlins. Number one is, with the offensive guys that the Orioles have in their lineup, you know they're just not going to be able to hit all the time, and they're going to have games like last night. And that's the number one takeaway, that there's going to be games at the plate like last night. The Orioles were held scoreless and had just three hits in last night's game. Anthony Santander had a double in late in the game. That was the only extra base hit for the Orioles. The only two other hits were two Austin Hayes singles, which was good for him as his average had dropped drastically and he got the day off on Sunday, but he had an infield single and then he blooped one into right field. It was a 2-for-3 night for Hayes as he was moved down to fifth in the Orioles order. Other than that, everybody had an offer. The Orioles only drew one walk, and that was DJ Stewart late in the game in the eighth inning, the only time he reached base. He is still hitless on the season, but he did draw the only Orioles walk. That Miami pitching staff was fantastic. Pablo Lopez, another guy who was already in the rotation, he showed how good he can be. Five scoreless innings, two hits, seven Ks, and no walks. He was fantastic. That changeup is ridiculous. The one spot that the Marlins did insert their new bodies was in the bullpen. James Hoyt, who they traded for from Cleveland, pitched a scoreless six. Of course, our old friend Richard Blyer, whom the Orioles traded to the Marlins over the weekend, he pitched a 1-2-3 seventh with a strikeout. Then they went back to guys who had already been in their bullpen, Brad Boxberger with a scoreless eighth, and Brandon Kintzler a 1-2-3 ninth to finish out the game. So that was the number one takeaway, the Orioles offense. It's just going to kind of look like that sometimes, with the guys they have in it, and it's all about how you bounce back. Number two takeaway for the Orioles goes over to the pitching side, and John Means looked better last night. I think that's your second takeaway, is that John Means definitely looked better. He goes 4 2/3 in his second start of the season, allowing one run on two hits, four strikeouts, and no walks. The only run he allowed was the final batter he faced with nobody on and two outs in the fifth, served up a solo homer to Francisco Cervelli, got behind him 3-1. It was one of the first three-ball counts for Means in the game. It might have been the only 3-1 count he faced in the game, and he just served up a fastball, and Cervelli put it into the first row in left field, just got out of here for a solo homer. But Means looked good. The velocity was sitting 94 to 95. He touched 96 a handful of times, which was even a tick up from his first start against the Yankees. The location of the fastball was good. The changeup command, still not there. He left a changeup up to Jesus Aguilar, who almost hit a double, if not for a great play by Santander in the gap in the first inning. Left another changeup up in the second that got ripped, that the Orioles had to make a nice play on. And so the hope is that he can continue with that that changeup command, which, you know, despite him at one point retiring 12 batters in a row, you know, it was a little shaky because of the command. Now, he did use the two different breaking balls, the curveball and the slider. Not a whole lot, but they looked solid in the game last night. I just think he's got to get that changeup back, because that was far and away Means' best pitch last year. And I know the velocity is up 4 miles per hour on both the changeup and the fastball. And the fastball has been much, much better this year, but he still needs that change to be an effective pitcher. So the hope is that the command comes around on that one. So John Means, better last night, still not where I think he can be, but definitely better in a good outing against the Marlins. He was followed by Travis Lakins, who gave up two runs, one of them earned in an inning. Of course, Renato Nunez's error brought in the other run. Paul Fry, no part of an inning. He was not throwing strikes when he came in the game. And then you got to give credit to Thomas Eshelman, who made his 2020 debut out of the bullpen. 3 1/3. He did a great job of resting the rest of this Orioles bullpen before the doubleheader today. That was big for Eshelman. 3 1/3, one run on just one hit, a strikeout and a walk. The only run he allowed was the solo homer to Jesus Aguilar in the eighth, when he just kind of center cut fastball on 3-0, and Aguilar turned on it and put it deep into the left field seats. But big ups to Eshelman. We know we won't see him today or tomorrow now to finish out this series. But big for him. That means the Orioles only use Lakins, Fry, and Eshelman out of the bullpen. That means the big-time arms, they're all still ready to go in this 2 7-inning games of the doubleheader. So that's your first two takeaways. John Means, and he was almost back, but he needs a little work. The offense we talked about, it's going to have those nights. But the final takeaway has to be about DJ Stewart. And we've harped on it, and I don't want to continue talking about it every episode, but if he's going to continue to be in the lineup every day, you have to bring it up. Stewart with an 0-for-2 with two strikeouts and a walk in last night's game. He is still hitless on the season. That walk he drew was on a 3-2 pitch that was really non-competitive. It was a pretty bad pitch from Brad Boxberger that was 2 or 3 feet outside on 3-2 that Stewart drew the walk in the eighth. But on the season, 0-for-14 with 8 strikeouts. Now, the one good thing is he has drawn 5 walks, so he's gotten on base a little bit. But that swing does not look anywhere close to the baseball. And I tweeted last night from our account at Locked On Orioles on Twitter, DJ Stewart looks worse at the plate than Chris Davis right now. And Davis, of course, only has the one hit. He's been looking pretty bad for a few years now. But DJ Stewart, just not close to the baseball. And he's also playing left field while Dwight Smith Jr. was DHing last night. And Dwight Smith hasn't hit the ball well at all, but he's still hitting 188, and it's been much better than Stewart. I think Smith needs to be out there in left, because DJ Stewart clearly cannot play the outfield. But the big thing is, you have these options. You even have Pat Valeika, who you can play. And I know you want to play DJ Stewart to really see what you have this year, because he was a first-round pick, and you don't want to give up on him. But Ryan Mountcastle is ready to go. The International League MVP in AAA last year. He's got the power. He can play a little bit of outfield if you need him to. He's just a great hitter. He's sitting there in the buoy alternative site. He's on your 60-man player pool. It's time to bring Ryan Mountcastle up. The time to lose the year of service time has passed, which is why you're seeing a lot of teams call up their big prospects now, including Joe Adele getting called up to the Angels yesterday and getting his first big league hit, one of the top prospects in baseball. It is time to call up Ryan Mountcastle, put him in left field. We don't need to see a lot more from DJ Stewart. It's just not really there. And I want to see Mountcastle, and I think a lot of fans do too. So that's your third takeaway from last night's game. Again, 4-0, the Marlins beat the Orioles. But the two teams will play two today. For the first time for the O's and the Marlins, they will play under the Major League Baseball's new doubleheader rule for 2020, which is 2 7-inning ball games instead of 2 9-inning ball games, just to help out the pitchers because of the short season and the injury issues. So the doubleheader will start at 5:05 Eastern time tonight. That is Wednesday night. In game one, Orioles and Marlins at 5 o'clock, it will be Eliezer Hernandez, the right-hander, the 25-year-old out of Venezuela, will go for the Marlins. He made 15 starts last year to a 5.03 ERA for the Fish, about 9 strikeouts, 3 walks per 9 for him in 2019. He is in his third big league season and will make his 2020 debut. Against Alex Cobb for the Orioles, been great in his first two starts. Cobb so far in the season, 9 1/3 innings pitched, 8 strikeouts, a 2.89 ERA, and the 32-year-old righty will make his third start of the season. In Game 2, as we record this here on Wednesday morning, the Marlins have yet to name their starter, but Atcher Wojciechowski will get his second start of the year for the Orioles. The 31-year-old righty went 5 innings, allowed 5 runs, but did strike out 7 in his first start of the year back on Wednesday against the New York Yankees. So you will see at least those 3 starting pitchers. We're waiting on the Marlins to name theirs. Name to keep an eye on, Jordan Yamamoto. Maybe looks like the most likely to start this game. The rookie who burst onto the scene last year with some good starts early. Just a name to look out for to start that second game for the Marlins. But the bullpens are going to come into play. The Orioles are rested. The Marlins used their best bullpen arms yesterday. So we'll see how that plays out. But the Orioles and the Marlins, couple of rebuilding teams. That brings us to our last point here before we get to Tommy Malone. Just quickly, we will have a full episode on this next week, but MLB.com, MLB Pipeline, putting out its new Top 100 Prospects list for 2020. 4 Orioles debuting in the Top 100. Adley Rutschman at number 4, Grayson Rodriguez at number 40. The first round pick this year, Heston Kerstad at number 68, and DL Hall at number 77. So those guys will be coming soon, hopefully in the next year or two, but right now the Orioles, especially in the rotation, have a guy like Tommy Malone, who has done a nice job through 2 starts for the Orioles. That opening day start was not fantastic, but he was much, much better on Sunday against the Tampa Bay Rays and looked really, really good. So to come on and talk about Tommy Malone, we will bring on Ben Palmer after the break. He's a writer for Pitcher List. He's written about Tommy Malone multiple times, and he's an Orioles fan too. And he tells us why we can be maybe even more excited about the O's veteran lefty right after this. Well, for the last, I guess it's been 5 months now, if I'm getting food from a restaurant, it's pretty much been through Postmates. I can get food delivered without even leaving the house or even opening the door. Given what's going on in the world still with COVID-19, they created non-contact deliveries. So now when I order from local restaurants, everything gets left right outside my door. There's also Postmates Pickup, which I've been using in order to order takeout from my favorite local restaurants. Listen up, you guys need to be supporting your local neighborhood spots right now. And I've pretty much been ordering mostly local restaurants because it's a great way to support the community. But Postmates doesn't just deliver burgers and sushi. They actually make my life easier by picking up everything I need from Walgreens, from 7-Eleven, and they drop it off right outside my door. Just download Postmates on iOS or Android, find your favorites, and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100. Yeah, you heard that right. $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDON. That's code LOCKEDON for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. So we welcome in Ben Palmer to the podcast. He is a fantasy sports writer for Pitcher List. And if you listened all the way back in March, that seems like 10 years ago, pre-quarantine, we had Ben on for a 2-part episode to talk about fantasy value on the Orioles. And Ben, welcome back to the pod.
Thanks for having me. It's funny, like March doesn't sound like it was all that far away, but like it feels like, yeah, it was a different lifetime.
I went and looked and I saw March 4th and 5th was when we had you on the first time, and it's hard to remember that was while sports were still going on. They were playing spring training games, and
that's true.
We were talking about a lot of different stuff back then.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, it's, man, back in the halcyon pre-COVID days, and the sun was shining and children were laughing and the air smelled sweeter.
And now the things that make us smile are soft tossing veteran lefties striking
That's
out eight.
Right.
And that brings us to why we bring you on the pod for the second time here, Ben. And that is Tommy Malone. And you know, you wrote a piece on him for Pitcher List about 3 weeks ago before the season started, you know, telling mm-hmm. people that, hey, Tommy Malone is not going to turn into somebody's ace this year, but just to maybe keep an eye on him. Malone goes out there after not a great start on opening day in Boston. You know, probably a little bit of that had to do with he would never thought in a million years he'd be an opening day starter this year. But start right. number two was great yesterday for the Orioles, or Sunday for the Orioles against the Tampa Bay Rays. He goes 5-plus innings, 8 strikeouts. He just gives up the one solo homer to Brandon Lau, the final batter he faced, 6 hits and no walks. So in watching Tommy Malone pitch yesterday, first of all, do you felt like that gave you a good chance to rehash the article and made you feel good about, you know, telling people to look out for Tommy Malone?
Oh, for sure. I was very excited. And the thing is the article I did on Malone was not so much, a lot of times when I do articles like a deep dive on a specific player, it's often me saying, hey, this guy has made some adjustments, made some changes, and I'm trying to tell you that they're legit or they're not legit. So it's sort of a reactionary piece. This was more of almost a proactive piece, because I had been looking into Tommy Malone and I saw that there are some really good pieces to his game and to his pitching repertoire. But there's just a few adjustments that I would love to see him make. I had, at the time, no evidence that he's going to make those adjustments, but more that if he happens to make those adjustments and an organization like the Orioles with Mike Elias at the helm, you know, Sig Meidel being in charge there, they are an organization who could get him to make those changes. If that happens, I think he could take the next step. And I will say, the very first game against Boston, he was doing the things I don't like him doing. So to give you just a brief overview of what's good and bad about Tommy Malone, Tommy Malone has an incredible changeup that is like exceptionally good. Last year, he made it. It had always been a pretty good pitch. Last year, it became incredible. It had a chase rate, so a percentage of pitches swung at outside the strike zone. It had the third highest chase rate in baseball, period, of all pitches, a minimum of 200 pitches. So you'll have some relievers who throw like 50 pitches that get a higher chase rate. I was kind of, in looking at this data, just looking at starters. And 52.4% of the time, hitters chased that changeup outside the zone last year. Third highest in baseball, behind only Justin Verlander's slider and Hyunjin Ryu's changeup. That's amazing. Like, that is an elite pitch. So he's got that, and that's probably the hardest thing for an MLB player to get, is an elite strikeout pitch. He's also got a slider that's pretty solid, not incredible, but it works. It's solid, induces weak contact. It's good. And then he has a horrible fastball that gets absolutely shelled and averages like 87 miles an hour. And the problem Malone had in years past, and especially last year, was he was locating the pitch poorly. He was basically locating his fastball in the middle of the plate. And if you throw an 87-mile-an-hour fastball in the middle of the plate to a major league hitter, it's not going to go well. They're probably going to hit the ball pretty hard. And that's kind of what was happening in Boston, where he was getting hurt, was when he was throwing these batting practice fastballs down the middle of the plate. So what I would love to see Tommy do I call him Tommy because obviously we're friends.
Right.
we're on a first name basis now. What I would love to see him do is one of two things: either elevate his fastball more. There's been so much research that has found that elevate your fastball, keep your breakers low, change the hitter's eye level consistently, and that works. Not 100% of the time, but it works better than, you know, laying it out over the middle of the plate. Or there have been other pitchers who have had some success moving away from a four-seam fastball and doing one of two things, either increasing the usage of their breakers or transitioning to a different type of fastball, so maybe a cut fastball instead of a four-seam fastball. I honestly, personally, would love to see Tommy Malone throwing more of his breakers, throwing more of his changeup and his slider. You get guys like Charlie Morton the past 2-3 years, his most thrown pitch is a curveball because it's incredible. Patrick Corbin's most thrown pitch over the past couple of years has been his slider because it's incredible. You can have a breaker be your primary pitch and have success. And what we are now seeing him do, Tommy Malone, is do that a little bit. And that's what's kind of exciting. That's what I think was a key to his success in the Rays game. Because in the Rays game, he threw his fastball 43% of the time and his changeup 39% of the time. So almost an even split there, which I like to see. So that's why I was kind of excited about the Rays game. All in all, in the season so far, it's only 2 starts. But he is throwing his fastball 42.1% of the time, which is the second lowest mark of his career so far. Sliders up to 15.7% usage, and the changeup is increased to a 38.6% usage. Again, 2 games, but if he keeps doing that and increases the changeup usage, increases the slider, and brings down the fastball a little bit, I don't know. I like his chances, and he's been elevating the fastball some as well this year. So if all of that keeps happening, I'm pretty excited about what he might be able to do.
And it was exciting to watch him on Sunday with the 8 strikeouts. Not always telling about what exact pitch you get the strikeout on, but 5 of his 8 Ks came with the changeup. I believe it was Codify that had tweeted out that his final strikeout on a changeup against a righty was the pitch that was chased the furthest out of the strike zone so far this season for a strikeout. And then the thing that surprised me is that he didn't get any Ks with the slider on Sunday. The other 3 came with the fastball. And do you feel like at least if he's using that changeup more, and that changeup, you know, he's very close to it being his predominant pitch, at least percentage-wise so far this season.
Mm-hmm.
Can that fastball, not that it'll be a strikeout pitch, but can it continue to work a little better at just 87 like it did on Sunday?
Yeah, so I think actually it could. And I want to note, it's funny you mentioned Codify, because that's another point I wanted to bring up, is he's been working with Codify. And if anybody doesn't know who Codify Baseball is, our own Alex Fast wrote a great article on how Codify is in Alex's opinion, probably the most inventive pitching development company since Driveline. And Tommy's been working with them. Dan Straley was working with them, and it's like crushing the KBO now because of it. So that I'm glad you mentioned them. But yeah, the strikeouts on his fastball were really interesting. He had a 36% CSW, which is called strikes plus whiff percentage, on his fastball in that game. And that's really good. And that's kind of weird for a pitch that maxed out at 87 miles an hour. So yeah, I think increasing the use of his changeup, I think that's going to kind of throw hitters off balance a little bit, because you're still changing speeds a good bit. I mean, his changeup averages about 79, slider averages about 79, and the fastball averages about 86. So you're still dropping a decent little bit of speed. I haven't dove really into this, but I would be very curious how well he's tunneling his pitches. So like, for anyone who doesn't know tunneling, having your pitches essentially travel down the same path until they break. So your fastball and your changeup both travel the same path, and then the last second your changeup breaks, so it's harder for pitchers to, for hitters to recognize what's coming in. It would be interesting to see how well maybe he's doing that. But yeah, I think if you are keeping the variety up, making it so that hitters aren't just sitting there going, okay, he's definitely going to throw me a fastball and I know I can crush that, then I think, yeah, I think you could see a little bit more swings and misses on his fastball, which would be great. Because if he can turn that fastball into even a like league average pitch, all of a sudden he's pretty solid.
So the last question for you, Ben, becomes, you know, with a guy like Malone, where he's at in his career, you know, how long he's been around, how many different teams he's pitched for, does he still have a chance at this point if he turns to that changeup as maybe his number one pitch, and maybe he does add a cutter, or at least, you know, pull back on the fastball and elevate it more? Does he have a chance with this velocity and knowing that, you know, he's not going to be a guy who goes to drive line this winter and comes back throwing 94, I wouldn't think. Does he have a chance in his career at this point to still revamp himself? And basically what he's looking to do is get back to the point where he was 5 years ago and be a guy who knows he'll be in somebody's starting rotation every single season.
Yeah, I think he absolutely does. Someone I would point to, not totally comparable, but we have seen pitchers tweak their repertoire and see success. Charlie Morton, like I mentioned earlier, 3 years ago, Charlie Morton joined the Astros and he was a pretty okay starter. Then all of a sudden the Astros worked with him and helped him increase the spin rate on his curveball and just retooled his repertoire, and he's throwing his curveball all the time, and all of a sudden he's a fantastic pitcher. He was 33 when he did that 3 years ago. Tommy Malone is currently 33. So it is possible for a guy to get information on his repertoire and turn himself into a better pitcher. There's a great book called The MVP Machine. And one of the things that the MVP Machine talks about is Trevor Bauer. And Trevor Bauer would tell you that he is not a natural athlete. The only reason he became the pitcher that he is through analytics, through hard work, through practice, and basically turning himself into a guy who has great technique. So it is, I think, entirely possible to take a pitcher and figure out what's not working, tweak the repertoire, and then the pitcher sees success. The Astros made careers, the people in the front office of the Astros have made careers out of taking other teams' trash and turning it into treasure, Mike Elias included in that. So it would be right in line with Elias and Sigmundell's careers to take a guy like Malone, look at him, say, here's some stuff that's working really well. Here's something you're doing that is not working at all. Let's tweak this and completely change everything. Malone's got nothing to lose. He's 33. He's on like his, what, fourth, fifth team or whatever. Why not? And then all of a sudden he becomes successful and he's, you know, trade bait for the Orioles or whatever it might be. It would totally make sense for that to happen. I'm not saying it will happen. You know, like I said, it's two games, and I try to resist the urge that is very common, especially in fantasy baseball analysis, to like watch a guy for a week and be like, there's the next Cy Young winner. So I don't want to do that, but I think he has tools. I think there is a lot in his game where you can point to him and say, this isn't all just luck. He's not just lucking out. So I'm excited about what he might be able to do. And I think the Orioles, with the organization that is currently in place, have the tools to make him better.
Well, Ben, you brought up a lot of stuff there, and it got me thinking about, you know, can they clone Wade LeBlanc into a Tommy Malone? Can they tell Asher Wojciechowski to just throw curveballs? And that's something that, you know, maybe we'll have you back on to get into that, as well as I know you love to talk baseball, but especially the Orioles, the team that that we both and most of the people here listening root for and are loving to see this surprising start to the season. But Ben, thanks again for coming on to talk Tommy Malone, and hope you're staying safe.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm happy to come on anytime to talk anything Orioles related.
So thanks again to Ben Palmer of Pitcher List for joining us and talking about Tommy Malone. Everybody get excited about the veteran lefty, Tommy Malone. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Special episode, Bryce Weiler, who works with the Orioles as their disability consultant, helped plan the Braille night a couple years ago when the Orioles wore Braille on their jerseys, and he's done much, much more. Bryce will join us for a great conversation tomorrow, and we will also recap tonight's doubleheader. Remember, 2 7-inning games tonight, starting at 5 o'clock. Orioles and Marlins play 2. We'll be back tomorrow on Locked On Orioles Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.